could be available to him. Haven't done a formal release, but obviously a guy that has a lot of options in front of him if he does choose to leave. I'll work with him. I told him I'd work with him the best I can in any way possible to help him get something that he's looking for. So.
Yeah, that makes sense. Hey, Coach, I know it's the first week of camp and everything.
Went through all spring with you.
Yeah. But worked out all summer with Ben Herbert.
Yeah.
I'm leaving. I've had enough.
Don't feel like it.
Less than 0 cents to me.
It's kind of very surprising.
I'm surprised.
At the beginning of the spring? Absolutely.
Let's see if Edward Ashoff is surprised.
Whether you're a Hog fan, a lover of Southern sports, or just someone who wants to know what's going on in the Premier League of College Athletics, snuggle up close to your radio, computer, or phone, because it's time to hear from ESPN.com's SEC insider, Edward Ashoff, who's here to tell you all you need to know about what's up and who's going down in the SEC.
All right, Edward, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well, but yourself?
I don't know. I'm better than Johnny Manziel. How about that?
Are you, though?
Not really.
Great.
No, I'm not. I need a little – we were just talking earlier about how he's got this guy who is sort of his faux turtle to his Vinny Chase running around trying to get money for autographs, and whether or not he actually knew anything about it remains to be seen. There were lots of things that Turtle did that Vinny never knew about.
True. I was a big fan of that show.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty excited about the movie coming out.
I am too. Yeah, we talked about that before too. Total sidebar here, but I wish they would have done it a little different way. I want them to start at the very beginning.
Yeah.
So there could have been two or three sequels. I mean, because let's be honest. Have you seen?
I just started watching the entire series over again from season one.
Adrien Grenier's been doing like low budget documentaries since he left.
That's all he's ever done.
He's sort of a fancy weed smoking kind of laid back dude. He's not really. He's not really your typical megastar.
No. So he's not really.
No.
Johnny Football in real life is what he was in the show.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So anyway, what do you think? Is there any ESPN's been all over this course. It all started on Outside the Lines, and I know you guys have been covering it closely. Is there any fire with all the smoke?
You know, I think it's going to be one of those situations where maybe we never really find out. And, you know, I read an article earlier this morning about it where, and I totally agree, it's going to be tough for the NCAA to find anything. Especially when you're dealing with someone who comes from a wealthy family. Whether he got paid or not, I think it's going to be one of those roads where the NCAA is just like, we don't have enough evidence. I think this is going to be a really tough job for anybody to investigate. And I keep going back to the whole question of, well, he comes from a lot of money. What's the point in getting money from these autographs? And so I think it's a really sticky situation right now. And it's high risk, high reward. If Johnny Manziel plays and the NCAA finds something, well, Texas A&M loses out. But, you know, you sit him and nothing comes out of it. What if he doesn't play against Alabama? There's no way Texas A&M beats Alabama without Johnny Manziel. Those first two games, you know, you don't need Johnny Manziel in there. Maybe you don't score as many points, you don't look as good. But you definitely need him for SEC play. And not having for Alabama is just basically the nail in the coffin for that game. So I think right now it's one of those situations that it's going to be tough for anybody to find anything because of how much money he comes from and the simple fact that, yeah, he comes from a lot of money, so what would be the point in even doing this? Why risk anything if you're Johnny Manziel?
Yeah, I know lots. But he is, like you said, I mean, he's not afraid to live on the edge. I mean, and he's not exactly – he's a high-risk, high-reward guy on the field, and I think he's a little bit of that off the field as well. That's just sort of his personality. And he thinks it's easy money, if the guy's going to give you, as it was reported, five figures just to sit there and sign some autographs, it's hard to say no because you know what? 10 grand's 10 grand. And if you're a college student, I don't care how much money your parents have. That's nice walking around change.
Yeah, and I think that would be tough for anybody. But at the same time, you just have to wonder, and you have to hope that everybody around Johnny Manziel and who's been in his ear has said, listen, you don't need that. Look what you come from. You're fine. I mean, if his college career and his football career were to end tomorrow, unfortunately, he would still be fine financially. And he comes from a family where, you know, things would be just fine for him if he didn't have football to fall back on.
Right.
So, I think that's still, you know, something that's going to weigh heavily on everything once the NCAA really starts to get going. And I just think it's going to be tough for anybody to find anything because of that crutch of money.
But what isn't hard to find is an inordinate amount of items that have been signed by him. And we have to believe that he sat there and signed hundreds, if not thousands, of items for no compensation whatsoever at the risk of a severe case of carpal tunnel. That's what I have to believe if I'm the NCAA.
Yeah, and you look at Tim Tebow. When I covered Tim Tebow, he was signing so many autographs his first couple of years that Florida had to put a stop to because it was just getting out of hand. It was a distraction before and after practice. So, I mean, if you're in Miami and you know, you want to do it, you have that opportunity. And then, you know, apparently that's what he did. So maybe he's a really generous guy when it comes to doing all that. I don't know. Until Johnny Manziel really speaks about it, I think that everybody's going to be kind of left in the dark about it.
What about his friend or personal assistant or manager or whatever, Nate? If he profited off of any of this, could Johnny Manziel get in trouble because of that?
It would be advertising, and you know that is the NCAA rule. If someone else close to him were profiting off of this, then I'm pretty sure that he'd be ruled ineligible for the same reason. You know, Texas A&M made money off of it. If his family made money off of it, so I think that if money exchanged hands because Johnny Manziel wrote something down. And to his knowledge, then I think, you know, he'd be a lot of trouble.
Edward Ashoff, SEC blogger for ESPN.com, joining us in the zone. You've already alluded to this to some degree as far as the Alabama game goes, but what does this team look like without him potentially if he's not there? As you mentioned, they could probably get over the hump on the first couple of games without him, but in SEC play, what's this team look like, you think?
I definitely don't think it's a 10-win team. I don't think it's a 9-win team just because – Johnny Manziel made that offense last year, and there are a lot of pieces around him who played well. Obviously, Ryan Swope was the guy who had a great season. You know, having Mike Evans back certainly helps. I think he's one of the best receivers in the SEC, but look at how many plays he made out of non-play situations, and I don't think they have that on their roster. I don't think they have a guy who has, you know, the moxie and the confidence that Johnny Manziel has, and that made a huge difference on certain plays. And Is Matt Jokel ready? I mean, he threw 11 passes last year for, I think, 42, 45 yards. Matt Davis redshirted last season. He enrolled early, didn't see a snap last fall, obviously. Could he take over? He's probably more athletic than Jokel. But after that, I mean, there's literally no experience. So I think that having a new offensive coordinator, yeah, the players are going to be similar to what they were last year. But not having a guy like Ryan Swope to help out Mike Evans, you know, Not having Cliff Kingsbury there to really help that offense, because this is an offense that doesn't really have much of a playbook. They have a few plays in mind. It's scripted, and you kind of figure it out from there. But Johnny Manziel is so good at improving that I just don't think they have that on their roster. And, you know, with the schedule that A&M has, Alabama, I think, is out of the question. Tough road games. I mean, now Arkansas becomes a tougher team.
Let's hope so.
Without Johnny Manziel, you know. Being on the road against Arkansas at Ole Miss, Vanderbilt is tougher now. So I think this is a team that takes a lot of steps back. Johnny Manziel is on the field.
Here's the thing, and I think a lot of Arkansas fans, if I asked Arkansas fans, if I polled the fans, especially since A&M is coming to Fayetteville, I think most people would want to see him play the game. Even if Arkansas doesn't win the game because he's in there and he plays well, I think most people want to see him. You don't get a chance to see a defending Heisman Trophy winner very often. To me, the game loses a significant amount of cachet, and I think for probably a lot of people who will face A&M this year from a fan base standpoint, it's probably the same situation.
Well, they signed Johnny Manziel last year and lost 58-10.
Yeah, that's
sucked.
But a lot of teams beat Arkansas that bad last year. So
if Arkansas had a chance to beat Texas A&M, I think they'd take that over seeing Johnny Manziel. I think in a season like this fall with the schedule that Arkansas has and the unknowns all around, if they had a chance to beat Texas A&M without Johnny Manziel, I think they'd take it.
Okay, let me ask you this then. Let's go hypothetical as long as we're being philosophical here.
We can have fun with this.
Out of 10 games played in Fayetteville this year with Johnny Manziel, how many times do you think Arkansas beats A&M?
With Johnny Manziel?
Yeah.
Oof. I don't know.
Come on. Just give me a number 1 to 10.
I'm going to go 0.
Okay.
I'm going to get a lot of flack for that.
No, I think I would probably say the same thing. Yeah. What about without him?
Maybe 3 to 4.
That's good. Okay.
Because, I mean, that's a huge.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
So the Twitter feed will say Edward Ashoff says Arkansas has a 40% better chance to win if Johnny Manziel does not play in the game. I'm going to go with that.
Especially with that defensive line, because I think that defensive line would give Matt Jokel or Matt Davis or my cat Miko a run for its money. So.
Is Jokel related to the offensive lineman that just went to the NFL?
Yep.
That's a rarity, isn't it?
A lot of family.
How many Division I quarterbacks, though, have brothers that are about the same age? One plays offensive line and one plays quarterback. That's pretty rare.
That's pretty good. I have no idea.
I wonder if there's ever been a Division I.
Not many.
I bet there probably has been, and I can't think of any where there's been an offensive lineman protecting his brother in Division I football.
I can't think of one.
In the NFL or anywhere else?
No.
Yeah. Okay.
I want to see a defensive end go up against the quarterback that's his brother.
Yes.
That would be good. If Jadeveon Clowney had a brother, play quarterback at Georgia or Florida.
I feel bad for that brother.
I do too.
Clemson.
That'd be good. I like that.
Be scary.
That would be fun. Okay, what about for Arkansas? We heard there as we were coming into this segment from Coach talking about Mikhail McKay, who is, I don't know if he's the most talented receiver for Arkansas, but he's certainly the biggest target from a wide receiver standpoint that Brandon Allen was going to have, and certainly they need all the help they can get in the pass game. So what do you think that impact is, and what's your expectation going in for what they're going to do in the air?
It was a real surprise to me. I think that he had a really good chance of really, you know, being productive this season if he could be, you know, Brandon Allen's big guy to throw to. But not having him, if he doesn't come, I think that really hurts Arkansas from a receiver standpoint, just because, you know, there isn't a ton of experience there. He caught 21 passes last year, and I think that he was somebody who was kind of on the rise in that offense. I think it all really goes back to the offensive line and Brandon Allen. If there's comfort up front and there's comfort at the quarterback position, you can make plays with wide receivers. I mean, I think a great example is Florida. They didn't have a ton of talent there, wide receiver. They had a talented quarterback, but that offensive line was really bad in pass protection, and you couldn't get the ball to anybody. You go this season, and now there's a lot of confidence there, even though you lose a couple of guys, same quarterback there, probably not close to the best receiving core in the SEC, but because that offensive line played better this spring, even though there are a lot of injuries, the coaches really like what they have right now up front, there's more confidence there. I think that's where Arkansas needs to get before it worries really about who's going to catch the ball, because we've seen it. If you don't have time to throw, it doesn't matter if A.J. Green is your wide receiver, you're not going to get the ball to him. So I think that's where Arkansas really needs to concentrate, because, you know, they don't have the receivers that they've had the last few years. There's not one guy out there that really sticks out. And if, you know, McKay is gone, I think that really hurts him from a talent standpoint. But, like I said, it's going to go back to that offensive line. If there's comfort there, if there's consistency in the pass protection, then I think Arkansas is going to be better, because I like this offense with the players they have around it to start off. I mean, this is going to be an offense where they want to run the ball. They have Collins. They have Williams. I think both of those guys are going to be able to keep the ball out of Brandon Allen's hands in uncomfortable situations at times, open up that passing game as much as possible. But it starts up front with the big uglies. We know that in the SEC. And obviously with the offense that Brett Bielema wants to run, that offensive line has to be really good, or they're not going to make many strides under him his first year.
Yeah, you know, I was just looking through the numbers, too, and I guess when you think about the fact that, although the numbers were not impressive because it's amazing, Kobe Hamilton has 90 catches to lead the team last year. Second on the list is Dennis Johnson with 25. The next receiver, I guess you go Greg at tight end, but as far as wide receivers go, Mikhail McKay is the leading returning receiver as far as number of catches and yards. So it's got to be a significant impact. And the thing is, the timing is so strange. That was the whole thing for us. If you had said this in the spring, sure. But to do it now, after you've already gone through all that, gone through the summer workouts, which from the before and after pictures we've seen on some of the linemen, Ben Herbert's been putting these guys through hell over the summer. It's a little bit weird that now all of a sudden he figures out, I'm not a good fit here. What?
Yeah, and you just have to wonder what happened during that time. Was it 7-on-7s when he realized, okay, this is going to be more of a run offense than a pass offense? It is really strange, but the only guess I have really right now is it has to be the style of play. I think that, you know, maybe he's a little spooked at the fact that maybe I'm not going to get the ball as much as I would in, you know, Bobby Petrino's offense. I think that any receiver coming into this team is going to realize that because of what Brett Bielema has done in the past, and it's worked for him. So, you know, maybe that's what it is with him right now, but, yeah, the timing is very, very strange.
I saw a report this morning. There was a prediction by one, and again, it's all about prediction season. We had talking season with the media days. Now we have prediction season, and then we'll get an actual football season here soon. But somebody predicted that the entire SEC West will go to a bowl game with Arkansas at the bottom with Auburn at 6-6. What's your anticipation for the number of bowl-eligible teams out of the West specifically this year?
I think there's a good chance of six. I still think with the schedule that Arkansas has, it's going to be tough for that team to get six wins. And, you know, if McKay's not there, I think that hurts them. Like I said, if the offensive line doesn't get together, that's certainly going to hurt them. And the defense, yeah, it returns a lot of guys from last year in the secondary, but that was a pretty bad secondary last season. And I think that having a good defensive line certainly helps out, but if the offense isn't on the field a lot, that's going to wear down your defensive line. And doesn't matter how much talent is there up front, you're going to get tired. And so I think that this is the worst schedule that Brett Bielema could have had to come into his first season with Arkansas. And I just think it's going to be too tough for Arkansas to make a bowl game.
That's disappointing. So if let's say Johnny Manziel, back to that for a moment. If Johnny Manziel, by the way, we're talking to Edward Ashoff, SEC blogger for ESPN.com. If you're just tuning in on the Revolution Hotline, Johnny Manziel, let's just say theoretically he's out of the mix, and some people have Jadeveon Clowney as their leading candidate going into the season anyway. Who else do you think rises up maybe a spot if Manziel for some reason is not available for some or all of the coming season in the Heisman race?
I think A.J. McCarron is a guy who could win the Heisman straight up, even with Jadeveon Clowney and Johnny Manziel playing, you know, pretty well this season. I think McCarron is a guy who could throw for 3,000 yards, throw for 30 touchdowns, throw for less than 5 interceptions. He's so efficient. He is no longer a game manager like he was his first season out there. And the thing is he hates when people say it. He says, if you call me a game manager, then you just don't know what the game of football is. And you got to love that. I think his moxie, his confidence has certainly improved. I think we all saw him push Barrett Jones in the fourth quarter of the national championship game. I mean, that game was over 10 seconds in, and he was still that competitive. So I think that A.J. McCarron, with the receivers he has coming back, Chris Black, I think, is going to be a very, very good receiver. He was out last year with a shoulder injury. Amari Cooper, obviously. O.J. Howard might be one of the most talented tight ends, and he's never even played college football yet. So I like him. I think Aaron Murray is going to lead the SEC in passing yards. On passing touchdowns, he has so much firepower around him. He can just throw the ball up and someone's going to catch it. But it's going to come back to how many wins, what position are you in at the end of the season. And I think McCarron is headed to another national championship. And I think that's going to really help him in the Heisman race.
Edward, you look at the NFL right now as training camp is opening. You see some players, some really valuable players going down with injury. Hope that doesn't happen in the SEC. But when you look at the conference as a whole, other than Manziel, who's the most important player, most valuable player to their team that they cannot lose this season?
I think it's A.J. McCarron. The depth at quarterback at Alabama is not great. And losing Philip Ealy certainly hurt. Was he A.J. McCarron? No. I don't think he was as talented, but he'd been in the system. He knew what was going on there on offense. Now you have Blake Sims, who's played some running back there. Cooper Bateman is a guy who a lot of stock in him, but is he ready to take over for a team that has so much riding on it that really might have the SEC riding on it? If Alabama doesn't make it to the national championship, I don't know what team from the SEC will. I mean, I'm not sure if a team from the East is right now capable of making that sort of run. I think that all those top teams are going to have at least two losses going into the SEC championship game. LSU, maybe. I mean, having Jeremy Hill back certainly helps, but losing all that talent on defense, you know, you have to think they're going to rebuild in some sort of way. So right now, I really do think that it's A.J. McCarron, just because there is no depth, no experience really behind him at quarterback.
Edward, we're just about out of time here. Michael Dyer's landed at Louisville after much debate as to where he would go. He's been given a zero-tolerance policy is the story we've gotten from there. What's your expectation for his contributions this season?
I mean, Michael Dyer was such a talented running back when he was, you know, in the SEC, when he was at Auburn. I think that being at Louisville in that conference, he could do a lot of damage. I mean, to have Teddy Bridgewater there, you're going to be able to run the ball, you know, whenever you want, because defenses are going to key in on the quarterback. So I think if he stays straight, if he can stay on the field, I think he could do a lot of damage for Louisville. And this is a team that if they go undefeated, has a chance to make it to the national championship. So having Michael Dyer certainly helped.
Well, it seems like, hey, that's a natural next step, right? I mean, you win a BCS game the year before over an SEC team, the natural next step is a title game.
Well, when you have the schedule that Louisville has and you go undefeated, you know, I think you got to hope that some other teams have one or two losses at the end of the season. Because strength of schedule, I know it doesn't factor into the BCS, but it factors into voters.
It does.
And the way that they vote. So, well, we'll see what happens.
That's it. Edward, thanks so much for the time. Appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, anytime.
All right. It's Edward Ashoff of ESPN.com.